What's up, Raider Nation? Matt Holder here from Silver and Black Pride to bring you another edition of the Behind Enemy Lines podcast. I've got my friend Justin Heyer here from the Finsider, SB Nation site that covers the Miami Dolphins. We're going to be talking all things Dolphins and all things Raiders today. But first things off, Justin, I just want to thank you for coming on, man. How are you doing?
Hey, I appreciate you having me. I'm doing good. I'm excited to be here, excited to talk some Dolphins Raiders. Obviously, it's going to be a big matchup for us both. Both teams aiming for the playoffs this year. So this is a big one. I'm excited to break it down.
Well, yeah. I mean, you bring up my first question, which is I kind of like to start things off generally. You know, now that we've had a couple of regular season games, obviously a full off season, how are you feeling about the Dolphins? You know, they were 10-6 last year and just missed out on the playoffs. Are you feeling confident about their playoff hopes so far this year?
Yeah, I mean, expectations were high, obviously, going into the season. Dolphins going into year three of a rebuild, a second-year quarterback, fifth overall pick, who was supposed to make the leap in Tua Tagovailoa. And like you said, coming off 10-6 with a head coach who was, you know, nearly a coach to your candidate, I was feeling really good going into the season. There were a couple of holes through the roster, a couple of, you know, pressure points that fans are certainly nervous about. And through two games so far, those are kind of manifesting. I know we're going to get into the nitty gritty of rosters and matchups and things of that nature. But week one, a very close win against New England, kind of needed a miracle play from Xavier Howard to force a fumble at the end to seal the win. And then last week, getting trounced by Buffalo, where really nothing went right. It's a mixed bag of feelings as a Dolphins fan. And I know most of Dolphins Nation is kind of hoping this could be a bit of a bounce back, get right matchup this week, but the Raiders are rolling. So I'm very cautiously optimistic and certainly quite a bit nervous.
Hey, I hear you, man. So I'm just curious before we get into the nitty gritty, like you talked about, you like to have the Dolphins at the top of the division, right? But I'm curious, is there any sort of like moral victory, or does it feel better to not be chasing the Patriots for once, like to be chasing someone else and feel like you kind of have a chance?
Going into Foxborough week one and beating New England, I mean, that was a highlight for sure, which is it's kind of sad that a week one win was a highlight of the past couple of years. But you're right. I mean, not having to stare at Tom Brady up there and saying, oh, well, we're all playing for second place, certainly feels good. Now, Buffalo, as evidenced by last week, clearly the superior team of the four in the AFC East. And so I think we're still kind of looking up and at this point, potentially playing for second place, but the season is young. So yes, there's a bit of a moral victory there. I can't lie.
Well, I think we got to kind of start off talking about the elephant in the room. What's going on with Tua, man? What do you think the chances are that he's going to play on Sunday? I mean, is he healthy or what?
Right now, it really seems like 50-50. There was no broken or cracked ribs, no cartilage damage. This is about pain tolerance. And so Brian Flores mentioned potentially putting a flak jacket on to ease up the pain, but the bruised portion of the ribs are on his throwing side, which obviously could impede his ability to make all the throws and to hit downfield and to be accurate. So over the course of the week, I'm sure we're going to get very detailed updates about how Tua's mechanics look in practice and about what the pain tolerance is like. I'm sure Flores is going to be asked, ad nauseum during press conferences, how's he feeling? Right now, it really seems like 50-50. This is not going to be a long-term thing. This is not going to be an all-season-long suffering kind of thing. This is just over the next couple of weeks. Can he manage the pain well enough to play? I will say, apparently Tua pushed to come back in last week, and the medical and coaching staff held him out. And so at this point, he wants to play. He's a tough kid, we all know, but the hip injury he went through and how he came back from that, he's tough. So he's going to push. It's just a matter of whether or not the coaching and medical staff thinks he can do it while, you know, fighting through the pain.
Well, since it's 50-50, let's talk a little bit about both scenarios, right? How confident are you in Jacoby Brissett as a starter after watching him for a little bit more than three quarters last weekend? And then, what does he bring to the table that Tua doesn't? And then the other way around, you know, what would they be missing with without Tua and with Brissett in?
Yeah, the offense looked different. It really did. And I think Jacoby Brissett, as people are looking back on that game, is sort of getting the short end of the stick. He didn't score any points, but it was not his fault. He played what I'd maybe even call admirably under the circumstances. The offensive line for Miami, and this is not an exaggeration, was historically bad on Sunday. They let up pressure on 70, that's 70%, 70% of Jacoby Brissett's passes. He was under pressure. That's unbelievable. So given what he was working with, he played pretty admirably. The main difference, the main advantage he gets over Tua, and you can actually see it, is the experience. He's able to sense the pressure a little bit better. He's also quite a bit bigger, so he's able to shake off a tackler a little bit better. He's certainly not as athletic and not as fast, but there's a certain sense of poise that he has, despite the fact that he was getting rocked on a regular basis. That said, he's nowhere near the natural talent of Tua, and that's also pretty clear. You can see it in the passes. Tua is able to hit throws that Jacoby just can't. So if we're talking about both scenarios, obviously I'd like to see Tua out there. I'd like to see him keep progressing, take the lumps, take another step. You know, week to week, he certainly looked better in the preseason than he did last year. Week one, we saw a little bit that we didn't see from him last year, and I'd like to see him keep taking steps. But if he can't make the throws, I'm not desperate. I'm not getting too crazy concerned about Jacoby being back there. He's a top five backup in the NFL. He started plenty of times, and he's got a lot of weapons. Waddle looked great. Parker has looked really solid so far. So my preference is Tua. If he can go, I'm not panicking if he can't.
Gotcha. Well, let's say he can play. It kind of comes with a bit of a territory of being like a high profile draft pick and really just a starting quarterback in the NFL. But he faced a lot of criticism over the last year plus. Do you think that criticism has been justified, or are people just expecting too much from him?
In part, criticism justified in part. There have certainly been times where, you know, there's a head scratching rookie play or two where you're like, you know, why didn't he see that open guy? Why is he locking onto the first read? That kind of thing. But I mean, the criticism is measurably amplified by the fact that Justin Herbert, who went one pick after, had a historic rookie season. And all Dolphins fans, I know it's like a painful sore subject, but I mean, listen, credit where credit's due. Herbert has looked phenomenal. He looks like a franchise guy. And when you have a quarterback who went right before, who doesn't quite look the same, and who also has a coaching staff who had him on a short leash, pulled him twice, you're going to get that kind of criticism. So some of it is deserved, but in a lot of ways, Tua, of all quarterbacks, saw the stat the other day, all quarterbacks who have come in since 2019, who have started significant games, Tua has the best win-loss record, right? I mean, it's not like he's been abysmal. He had an 11-5 touchdown interception ratio. His yards per attempt were not terrible. In fact, they were kind of average. A lot of his statistics are just kind of average. And you don't want average when you're a fifth overall pick. So is criticism justified in that sense? Sure. But you still see the flashes of brilliance, the flashes of magic. You saw it last year against Arizona when he had the comeback win. You saw it against Kansas City when he almost had a comeback win. He still is that same accurate playmaking, you know, consummate leader, fantastically accurate quarterback in many of his throws that we saw at Alabama. It's just the NFL game is a lot faster. And, he's had an abysmal offensive line. So some of it justified, some of it I think is certainly overblown.
Yeah. I mean, you bring it up, you know, his numbers were kind of average, which obviously, like you said, you want to have better than average, but average for a rookie is nothing to scoff at, right? Like just above the Mendoza line, that's not a bad year, but yeah, definitely see where you're coming
off a catastrophic hip injury and having no preseason. Like that stuff matters too, you know?
Yeah, for sure. So I'm curious, where have defenses given him trouble and what types of defenses or looks does he kind of like pick apart in his young career? And maybe the same question for Brissett too, if you know enough about him right at this point.
Yeah, so with Tua, in terms of the things that he struggles most with, when he faces heavy pressure, you can see the panic a little bit, the rookie panic, right? Where he is just trying to find a way to get rid of the ball. He doesn't quite throw it away fast enough when he is under that kind of pressure. And by the time he is trying to throw it away, it's sometimes too late, where he's taking a sack. Or you saw it in the New England game, he threw it away too late, and it ended up being a pick because he was being thrown to the ground while he was trying to throw it away. So there's certainly a bit of holding onto the ball too long when he's under that kind of pressure. Now, where he's going to pick you apart is over the middle of the field, the quick hitter throws. He's surgical in that way. And so we saw it certainly in New England a couple of times where he had Devontae Parker or Jaylen Waddle doing crosses over the middle of the field, and he will hit them right on target, right on stride, and Waddle will then run for another 15, 20 yards. And in that way, he is surgical. He also has a pretty darn good deep ball. They just haven't been, you know, they haven't let him unload it. Last year, it was because the offense, it seemed like Chan Gailey didn't want him to, the offensive coordinator who is no longer with Miami, and against New England and certainly Buffalo, I mean, there was just no time. The pressure was in his face, you know, within half a second. And so there's no time for routes to develop downfield. So if you want to rattle him, the heavy blitzes seem to be the way to do it. But if you're giving him any kind of time and you leave the middle of the field open, he will be able to pick you apart. With Brissett, not necessarily quite the same skill set. And I, you know, if I'm honest, I certainly didn't watch all of his Indianapolis starts. Right. So I wouldn't be able to give you a play-by-play breakdown. And Buffalo was certainly no measuring stick as to what his his ability is. But same kind of thing where, you know, I mean, if any quarterback is under that kind of pressure that he faced in Buffalo, it's going to be tough for him to deal with. But he did a pretty admirable job given the circumstances.
Yeah, I mean, you brought it up a few times. We're talking about the offensive line and, you know, how much they've struggled. And I'll be honest, I feel like this matchup, Miami's offensive line versus Las Vegas' defensive line, is a matchup that kind of heavily favors the Raiders right now. So I'm curious.
Concerns me.
Yeah, I was just about to ask you, I mean, what are your thoughts on that matchup so far heading into the game?
I'm nervous about Miami's tackle situation. So the offensive line is the story of the week, right? Barry Jackson of Miami Herald put in an article today that said the Dolphins are considering all the options at this point, because that was, like I said, a historically bad showing. So the offensive line going into last week with all the starters, Austin Jackson, 2020 first round pick, who has struggled quite a bit at left tackle, Solomon Kinley at left guard, Michael Dieter at center, Robert Hunt, 2020 second round pick at right guard, and then the one veteran on the line is Jesse Davis at right tackle. All of them were pretty poor. Michael Dieter has done okay at center. He's been the team's best alignment so far through 2 weeks. And Liam Eichenberg, this year's second round pick, came in when Jesse Davis had a knee injury at the end of last game for him at right tackle. So it seems like that line, that combination is probably going to change going into this week. They're talking about benching Solomon Kinley at left guard. They're talking about moving Austin Jackson to guard. They're talking about moving Robert Hunt. They're talking about Liam Eichenberg coming in as another starting spot somewhere. So it seems like that's going to move. So in terms of exact matchup, I can't exactly tell you. What I will tell you is that in terms of whoever's at tackle, no one's been good enough. And so I'm nervous about Carl Nassib and Max Crosby, because two of them have looked pretty, pretty solid through 2 weeks. They certainly, throughout each of their careers, have been able to dominate games. So that tackle versus DN matchup is something Dolphins fans should worry about and Raiders fans should be excited to see.
Well, I tell you what, I'm sorry for you, but I gotta be honest, I kind of like what you're saying here, Justin. But I'm just curious, man, what's been the issue up front? Is it for the Dolphins? Is it like a lack of investment, draft picks just not panning out, free agent signings not working, or a combination of both? Like, how is that? What's kind of been the crux of the issue?
And go on Dolphins Twitter and everyone will have a different answer you, because it seems to be everything. But it's certainly not lack of draft capital investment. I mean, that offensive line is it's a first round pick at left tackle. There's two second round picks fighting for starting spots. There's a fourth round pick who's right now in a starting spot and a third round pick who's in a starting spot. What seems to be the issue is lack of identifying guys who are going to develop at the next level and lack of development once these guys are picked. There were Dolphins fans also who felt like the team waited a little too long and picked a mid-tier tackle. Let's say if you go back to Austin Jackson's draft class, Tristan Wirfs has been stellar. Jedrick Wills has been stellar. Mekhi Becton, when healthy, has been stellar. And then they waited instead of moving up and getting their guy. That's certainly an issue when we're looking at left tackle right now, because Austin Jackson has been one of the worst tackles in the NFL. He was picked 18th overall just a year ago. So that's a problem. In my opinion, also not enough free agency capital, cap resources are going into the O-line. And I totally understand that when you look at free agency, generally the best linemen don't make it that far. But you look at a team like Kansas City and they're making it work anyway, right? They traded for Orlando Brown. They went out and spent money on veteran guys who they've been able to plug and play. Miami has not done that and has had the ability to do so. So you can look at any number of factors and say that's the reason the O-line's not working out. But lack of commitment in free agency and lack of ability to go up and get a premier asset instead of one of the mid-tier draft assets are probably the two big ones on my mind. And one other thing I'd point out is that it's really young. It's a really, really young O-line. You have three guys who are second-year players, and one guy who hasn't played center since 2016 is now at the starting center. And so when you're talking about identifying blitzes and calls, like things like that, you know, it could just be, and obviously Dolphins fans hope, is that there just needs more time, but we'll see.
Well, you bring up, you know, the Austin Jackson's offensive tackle class. I'm curious, and I know it's early, but is there a little bit of regret about taking Jalen Waddle over Penei Sewell?
Oh man, I was just talking about this with some friends today. Maybe. Penei Sewell has looked great for Detroit, right? Goff had a lot of times to throw yesterday in the first half. That being said, I'm very confident that Jalen Waddle is going to be a very good football player for a very long time. I mean, this is a guy who has all the talent in the world. He really does. We saw, I don't know if you remember, there was a leaked clip that came out of Jacksonville's war room when they were doing some of the draft promotion, where they had him as the highest graded guy on the board next to Trevor Lawrence. So no, because I think Jalen Waddle's that talented. But kinda, because I'm seeing Tua get thrown to the ground and have bruised ribs because he doesn't have any protection. And then, you know, if they took Penei Sewell, you'd see Mac Hollins starting outside right now. And Dolphins fans would be saying, why didn't we invest in more wide receivers? So it's a bit of a double-edged sword, but it's certainly tough to see Goff have tons of time and Tua have bruised ribs because there's no protection. So
yeah, definitely is a catch-22. So I'm just curious, you know, before we move on, you know, what about the rushing attack? I mean, obviously the pass blocking is going to stand out a little bit more because it is a passing league and that's what people are going to talk about. But I'm curious, you know, are they better against the run or is it about the same? You know, what is that? How does their ground game attack work up front?
You're talking about Miami's offense still?
Yeah, Miami's offense. Like, how has their offensive line performed as run blockers and whatnot?
A little bit better. Running lanes have certainly been a little bit better than pass protection, but that's not saying there's not a high bar there. It's not saying a whole lot. There's not enough push, certainly in the interior right now, you know, as we'd like to see. Miami doesn't have a superstar running back, but Myles Gaskin is certainly serviceable and has shown plenty of flashes. So there has not been enough, particularly in the short yardage ground game. We saw it several times against Buffalo where Miami just needed a couple of yards for a first down on a third or fourth. And they tried to run it, and there was just no push. There was guys in the backfield right away. So not a whole lot better. I know that the Raiders D-line, you know, a lot of the names are on the edge, but you still have some capable players there in the middle. You know, to talk about a guy like Jonathan Hankins.
Right.
So you guys might have the edge with the interior too. The whole front five, when you talk about Miami's offense versus the Raiders defense, probably goes to Las Vegas at this point.
I'm liking what I hear. I know it's bad news for you, but I'm
still. It'll get better for us when we move to other positions.
Yeah, we'll go. Well, let's move on though. Let's move talk about some of the offensive weapons, the skill guys from Miami. When you know brought up Jalen Waddle, so let's start with him. I'm a big draft nut, so I'm just kind of curious. You know how he's been doing. You know, early on in the season, is he already a big enough piece in Miami's offense that Raider fans should be worried about him?
He's been as advertised. He's been playing each game. I think he's played between 60 and 80% of the snaps from week one to week two. And when you get the ball in his hands, man, he is dangerous. He really is. There was, I think, one drop at some point in New England, but then he made up for it right away with a highlight reel catch. And he's not just you give him a screen and hope he gets 15 yards. I mean, there was one of these plays 20 yards downfield where he just went up over the cornerback and took it down. So he's been as advertised. I've been really excited, and I hope they get him the ball as many times as possible. You know, when you look elsewhere on the receiver core, Devontae Parker is still as solid as they come. When you're talking about one of those 50-50 contested catch guys, and obviously as a headline for a lot of Dolphins fans, Will Fuller, who missed week one finishing a suspension, and then week two with a personal matter, is apparently now back with the team. I wouldn't be surprised if he's on a bit of a pitch count just because he barely practiced with Miami. He had an injury during training camp, but you put him in there and then Parker Waddle Fuller, that's what Dolphins fans have been salivating for all offseason long. So in terms of skill positions, Miami's wideouts and pass catchers versus the Raiders secondary, I think I'd probably give the edge to Miami, especially when you start throwing in like Mike Gesicki, you know, one of the top playmaking tight ends in the NFL in there. There's a lot to work with so long as there's time to throw.
Yeah. We bring up Devontae Parker. And so I just have a question for you. Does he catch anything other than like go routes and back shoulder fades? I swear to God, every time he pops up on my TV screen, that's what he's doing.
That's certainly where the NFL red zone highlights are going to have him, because that, I mean, that's where he's at his best and most exciting. You could put him up against just about anyone in the NFL in terms of contested catchability, and he's right up there. Now, he doesn't have the most polished route tree in the NFL. The Dolphins, though, are actually using him a lot of times, though, as like this, I don't want to say big slot, but they'll use him in like these slants where he'll just box out the cornerback when the team needs 7 or 8 yards. And he's just too big for smaller corners to get when he cuts on inside routes. So they'll use him then too. Certainly though, the most exciting plays you'll see are like the ones you're saying where he'll either run a go route or a post towards the middle of the field or towards the sideline. And he just, you know, jumps higher and reaches further than whatever corner or safety is on.
So I'm curious, have you been seeing you're talking about the Dolphins use Parker more in the shorter areas. Have you been seeing that more with like Jalen Waddle in the mix now? Is that kind of impacted, is that how he's impacted Parker and kind of opened things up a little bit now that they don't need Parker to win or be their only downfield option?
Absolutely. Jalen Waddle certainly opens up the offense quite a bit. And that's also part of the reason they're doing that is because that's to his strength, right? Is he is pinpoint accurate on those intermediate throws. And so if you're able to get a big body with a big catch radius like Parker in there, because the teams were, you know, the defense is worried about Waddle blazing by, that certainly helps, right? Because then you don't have a safety cut, you know, coming in and hammering Parker over the middle. So that certainly helps, but there were definitely a variety of routes with both of them over the course of those two games. I'm curious to see how they're going to do that against Las Vegas, because in terms of comparing secondaries, I'd probably give New England and Buffalo the edge in terms of secondary talent over Vegas. So I'm hoping to see that there's a little bit more with Miami's aerial attack, because it was, I mean, they won against New England, but the aerial attack was by no means, you know, on fire. So hopefully this is a week where they can start to get that a bit more on track.
Gotcha. So Mike Gesicki, to me, he's always been this guy, like going back to his days at Penn State, that's been like an athletic freak. And he was productive last year. He had a pretty good year last year, so I should give him a little bit more credit than I'm about to, or as it sounds like I'm about to take away from him. But it seems like he's never really been able to put it together for a full season. Do you think that this is the year that he finally puts it together? And kind of what does he bring to the table? And, you know, what are your thoughts on him as he enters year four?
I mean, you're right, and it's frustrating. It's frustrating as a Dolphins fan, because he hasn't entered or really even necessarily approach the Travis Kelce, Darren Waller, George Kittle tier. And he hasn't quite broken into the, you know, Mark Andrews, TJ Hawkinson tier either.
Yeah.
He's like, but he has the talent to do so. It's very frustrating because, like you said, it's like never been put together for a full season. He'll have games where he's absolutely dominant, where the defense can't do anything to stop him. And then he'll disappear for 3 weeks. It's very strange. I mean, these past 2 weeks, I don't even know if he has, like, he might have one or two catches over the first 2 weeks of the season. And like that's unacceptable if you're supposed to be talked about as one of the top,
right,
you know, 7 or 8 guys at the position. He is an athletic freak, right? This is a guy who, like Devontae Parker, is going to win every contested catch. He's also pretty darn fast for a tight end. You put him on a linebacker, he's going to be too fast, too quick. You put him on a safety, he's going to be too big, too strong. But you're right, he does just disappear at times. I don't necessarily know if that's lack of, you know, or offensive coaches not scheming enough balls to him. I'm not sure if it's just, you know, he's losing effort on routes. It's kind of hard to tell, and it's a bit of an enigma. We'll see. Who generally covers safe tight ends for the Raiders? What's his matchup this week?
So it's been in the past Corey Littleton, but Corey Littleton has kind of struggled. They signed him as a free agent last year. He struggled to cover tight ends last year. And then this year, he's been not probably as bad, but still not what we need him to be. And so it's kind of like a mixed bag. They kind of like to throw a lot of different looks. And I mean, with Gus Bradley, they're going to run quite a bit of zone coverage, so they're not going to really man him up too much. I think it'll still be Littleton, moving forward. But that being said, like what I was just talking about, he hasn't played well in 2 weeks, didn't play well last year. I wouldn't be surprised if he's on a short leash. So I could see maybe them going with maybe more like a Jonathan Abram, who's a little bit more aggressive, but it's obviously going to give up quite a bit of size to a Dusecki. So I think the plan will be, at least initially, to put Corey Littleton on him and like have him take him away and go that route. But then again, like I said, that could change quickly in a matter of a quarter if things aren't going well. Yeah. So I Dusecki is one of the interesting matchups because a guy, like you said, like, you know, I know where Jalen Waddle is going to be. I know where Devontae Parker is going to be. I don't know who's going to be covering him. Obviously, it's going to be Casey Hayward and Trayvon Mullen, and obviously the safeties in the back end. But I don't 100% know what they're going to do with Gesicki. I don't know if KJ Wright, maybe they put him on him a little bit more. But yeah, he's an interesting guy, and I think somebody that I really think could be an X factor and make a difference for the Dolphins, even with all those other talents. So. But to follow up,
this is the week. Maybe this is the week maybe. That he bounces back. We'll see.
Maybe this is the week I can finally play him in fantasy football, right?
this would be a good bounce back week to do so if you have no other options, though I know he probably hasn't instilled much confidence over weeks 1 and 2.
So I just got to follow up with you. Why the hell, and I didn't realize this until I was doing research for this, why the hell does the Dolphins have 5 tight ends on the roster? Like, I thought the Raiders.
I have no idea. I'm so happy you brought this up. It makes no sense. It's a waste of a roster spot. I don't agree.
Yeah,
I don't get it.
It's funny. The Raiders have 4, and I think that's a lot. But I mean, okay. John Gruden likes to use a lot of like 12 and 13 personnel, so it makes sense.
Yeah.
But 5, like you said, like when you only get 53 guys, you have 3 specialists, so you really only have 50 people on the roster. 5 was to me, I'm like, that's 10% of your entire roster right there. But that was wild.
Very strange. So obviously, you know, the Gesicki is the star of the group, but the Dolphins, they drafted Hunter Long in the third round. I like Hunter Long. He was very productive at Boston College. And I think if Gesicki prices himself out of Miami's free agency range this year, because he's going to be free agent, you could hopefully slot Hunter Long in there to take over. But beyond that, you have 3 guys, Adam Shaheen, Durham Smythe, and Seathan Carter. And to me, they're kind of, it's redundant. Seathan Carter, they signed to like, it's like a 3-year, $8 million deal or something in free agency to be a hybrid special teams fullback tight end. So sure, he's your special teams tight end. But then Shaheen and Durham Smythe, I mean, Smythe came in the same class as Gesicki. He's more of the blocker. I don't understand why they gave Adam Shaheen an extension. That didn't make a whole lot of sense to me. It hasn't really done a whole lot. He caught 1 or 2 touchdowns last year and is sort of the guy you throw in if anything happens to Gesicki, but he's never lived up to his draft status hype. You can easily slot Durham Smythe or Hunter Long, in my opinion, to do the same thing Shaheen would do. So beats me. Waste of a roster spot, in my opinion. This is nothing against Shaheen as the person, although he's created some Twitter controversy that I won't get into over the last month or two. But to me, waste of a roster spot, and I'd rather see them bring up one of their up and coming young guys, like Dolphins fans will know, a Kirk Merritt. Gotcha. He was a preseason star receiver. Would much rather he is the roster spot.
Well, I'm glad we're on the same page with that, because that blew my mind for a good minute.
Yes, but makes no sense.
Yeah, I think it was last year, but the Dolphins seemed to have a lot of turnover at running back, where a lot of guys were productive, but it didn't seem like they had their go-to guy until I think probably about midway through or maybe the end of the year when Myles Gaskin kind of took over. So my question is Gaskin the guy moving forward? And can you tell us a little bit about what he brings to the table?
Yes, he's the guy moving forward. Dolphins fans were clamoring for Najee Harris. They were clamoring for Javonte Williams once Harris went. We're talking about the most recent draft class. And then Denver leaped Miami to grab Javonte Williams. Then they were clamoring for Michael Carter, Javonte Williams running. Dolphins fans felt like that position needed reinforcement, and they're probably right. Gaskin is a great, in my opinion, complimentary back, someone you want to give 10 to 12 carries. He's also a fantastic pass catcher out of the backfield. But he is not very good in pass protection. I think he had a 14.0 pass protection grade against Buffalo. from PFF. And that's...
That might have been the highest grade they had. That might have been the highest grade Miami had.
Very funny. I mean, it was bad, man. So he is not your three down guy. That being said, I'm excited when he gets the ball in his hands because he makes some explosive plays. Then there's Silvan Ahmed. He also good in spurts, good in flashes, not a three down guy. And then there's Malcolm Brown, who in my opinion should not be carrying the rock very often. He's good in pass protection. That's about all I want him doing. He had a 4th-and-2 carry where he was just stuffed at the line. Though again, like I told you, not a whole lot of push up there. So there really is no guy that Vegas fans should be like afraid of. Although I'm sure you'll remember that Gaskin had a couple of explosive plays last time we played you guys. So when he gets the ball in space, that's when he's dangerous.
Trust me, I'm still trying to figure out how Fitzmagic completed that pass. I mean, I guess I just answered my own question. Yeah. It was just Fitzmagic. So trust me, I remember last year's game very vividly and remember Miles Gaskin. I think it was Corey Littleton actually that missed the tackle. Now that we're talking about it, on him for what, like a 75-yard touchdown. So
exactly,
that is ingrained in my memory. But well, let's pivot to Miami's defense, which I think is definitely the strength of the team for them. And you know, let's flip the order around a little bit and work our way from the secondary up. And I mean, the Dolphins secondary, like you kind of talked about at the beginning, is a really impressive group with a lot of recognizable names, with Xavien Howard, Byron Jones, Jason McCourty, Eric Rowe. So can you briefly talk about like what makes each of them a little special and what they kind of bring to Miami's defense?
Yeah, this is where Dolphins fans can start getting excited again, because this is the strength of the team. This is the top unit, is the secondary. Obviously, Xavien Howard is, in my opinion, the top 1 or 2 cornerback in the NFL. Byron Jones gets some flack because he got this massive contract in Miami and doesn't really bring down interceptions like X does. But he's certainly one of the top cover corners when he's on his game in the NFL. It's been a little streaky with Miami, more so than probably the most Dolphins fans would like given the contract. But that's a top 5 or 6 cornerback duo in the NFL. The safeties look fantastic so far this year. Jason McCourty looks vintage so far as the veteran leader of the group at safety. And then where most Dolphins fans are probably most excited at this point is with Javon Holland. So the Dolphins took Holland, I think, a few spots before Morig. You guys took Trayvon Morig in the second round as a rookie safety this year. And Holland is the highest graded rookie in the entire NFL right now, offense or defense. He's looked stellar. He only played 35% or so of the snaps last week, but in week one. But his play was so great that he was bumped up like 78% of snaps in week two, and he had a fumble recovery. He was making tackles. He was getting quarterback hits. He's been good in coverage. Hopefully he's going to be one of those chess pieces that can move around to a bunch of different spots and do a bunch of different things in the secondary. And there's a ton of depth there too. Eric Rowe is Miami's tight end cover guy, although he was kind of abused by Darren Waller last year, but outside of Darren Waller, has done pretty darn good covering tight ends. You have Nick Needham, Justin Coleman. These are maybe not as much name brand guys, Brandon Jones, but guys who have contributed so far pretty well through their, some of them shorter, some of them longer careers in Miami. So Dolphins fans love this secondary. It's the highest paid and best part of Miami's team. And there are some weapons I know on the Raiders. Ruggs is finally finding his footing. Bryan Edwards too, but I'm certainly giving the Miami advantage to Miami when we're talking secondary versus weapons.
Yeah, I have to tell you, like every year, or not maybe not every year, but like the last few years when the Dolphins haven't been as competitive, like I'll get Raider fans clamoring to like, we should trade for Xavien Howard. I'm like, guys, he's not going anywhere. Miami's not going to trade him. Like he's that good. So I definitely hear you. I like Miami's secondary a lot. But I'm curious can you give me a matchup that you might think or you think would favor the Dolphins, and then maybe one that might be a little bit more challenging that might favor the Raiders in the secondary.
Yeah, when I'm talking about outside corners, I got to go Miami. I know Ruggs and Bryan Edwards have shown some more flashes last week. And certainly Bryan Edwards, when we're talking about the Ravens game. But, I mean, this is, again, top 5 or 6 cornerback duo in the NFL. It'll be tough for Carr to hit his wideouts in this one. I mean, I think any matchup, though, you give to Darren Waller, I don't care who's covering him, Darren Waller gets the edge.
Yeah.
And we saw last year, certainly against Eric Rowe. Eric Rowe has been a tight end eraser against most teams. but not against Darren Waller. So yeah. That matchup to me still goes to Las Vegas. If Miami can maybe double him, maybe they put Javon Holland shadow with Eric Rowe. That might be a good move because I trust Xavier Howard and in most cases, Byron Jones to do a bit of lockdown on the outside, gotcha. Especially because they're not playing these X factor top tier wideouts. So yeah. I'm hoping they find another way to cover in Darren Waller.
Well, I could tell you there's covering tight ends and then there's covering Darren Waller. I mean,
he's like, a different animal, man. Yeah. John Gruden, what do you call him? Like the best players ever coached or something.
Yeah. Like, and I mean, normally I think when John Gruden talks, it's a lot of BS, but when he says that, I'm like, yeah, this guy, like it's legit. Like he is legitimately their number one receiver. So I mean, the bracket coverage, like, I ask everybody that comes on, like, how are you going to stop Darren Waller? Just because I love to hear the answers and hear the stuff people come up with. But yeah, it sounds like you've hit the right answer, in my opinion, where it's basically like you just have to bracket coverage with them and hope your corners on the outside don't get beat by Ruggs or Edwards. So, and then the last question before we move on, and this is more for me personally, just because, like I said at the beginning, I'm a big draft nut. What's going on with Noah? And I'm not even going to try and say his last name, but the corner out of Auburn, I saw he hasn't even recorded a snap yet this year. So is he just not playing well? Is he injured? Like what's going on with that guy?
It took me a while to learn too. We tried together.
Igbenogany. Not as bad as I thought, but I never would have got that on my own.
Yeah, no, it definitely took me a while. So he just hasn't played well to answer your question in all honesty. Last year, Byron Jones missed a couple of games and they just threw him into the fire and he was not good. He was really bad. Now I sort of get it. He has not been playing the cornerback position his whole life. So I understand. That's a pick though that I think Chris Greer would like to have back. He went all in on like ceiling potential, but forgot that this particular player also had like a massively low floor because he has very little experience in the position. It was an all athleticism pick. This is a guy who can run with the best of them. And if you manage to get the fundamentals and technique down, I'm sure he'd be great, but he's not there yet. And when you're talking about a unit that's the strength of the team, right, where it's extremely deep, I mean, he's not cutting it right now. So that's short and simple. That's one I think Chris Greer would like to have back.
Gotcha. Well, I tell you what, you don't have to remind Raider fans about the dangers of height, weight, speed guys. So.
Yes. Yeah. Mike Mayock does that quite a bit as well. Mike Mayock and John Gruden. So you guys get it.
Yeah. I mentioned at the beginning part of the show that the Raiders defensive line has an advantage over the Dolphins offensive line. So I've got to give credit and admit that I think the reverse is true when the Raiders have the ball. Mm-hmm. So how hard is it for opposing offenses to run the ball against guys like Christian Wilkins, John Jenkins, and Emmanuel Agba?
It's funny, you're saying those are some big names, but Miami's run defense has actually been a little bit of a concern over the past year or two. I mean, Christian Wilkins is a little bit hot and cold as the playmaker on the interior. Emmanuel Agba has actually been pretty steady. The Dolphins, though, are massively missing Raekwon Davis already. This was a guy who was really ascending towards the second half of last year, and with Christian Wilkins was supposed to be like this really dynamic duo in the middle. And Raekwon Davis got hurt, I think it was a knee injury, and is now on short-term IR. He should be coming back hopefully midway through the season, but obviously not for this game. John Jenkins is more of a veteran journeyman, and he's had some flashes in terms of run stuffs in the middle that were certainly nice to see. But I wouldn't actually say that this is one that immediately goes to Miami. The defensive line has been a point of contention and pass rush too when we're talking about Dolphins. Because there just hasn't been enough of it. So this might actually be a wash. I know you guys, this is sort of a retooled O-line, right? For Las Vegas.
That's kind of where I was coming at is, Richie Incognito, which obviously you guys know well, no Jonathan Martin though, but Richie, he was injured, missed pretty much all of last year. He played like two games and whatnot. And in the second game, he played like five snaps, something like that. And this year during like the third week of training camp, he went down with a calf injury and he hasn't practiced ever since. And I mean, the guy's 38 years old, 320 plus pounds. Like that's a lot of mass on those like lower limbs and, repaired ligaments to be able to support. So it's kind of like very weird situation where the Raiders aren't giving us a whole lot of information, but he hasn't practiced. And like I said, like over a month, hasn't played in the first two games. So obviously that's a, huge loss for them up front. You know, him in the past, he's been one of their best offensive linemen, or I should say the 1 year he was healthy, he was their best offensive lineman. And then, you know, they got rid of Rodney Hudson in the offseason, replaced him with Andre James. Andre James has struggled a lot, especially as a run blocker. He's a converted tackle. And I mean, he's like, I don't know, he might be a little bit heavier now.
Center.
Yeah. You don't see that often. He's less than 300 pounds. Like, he's like 298. He might be up there now. Now he put some weight on, but he just really struggles there. And then at right guard, they had Denzel Good, who he tore his ACL about 15 plays into this year. So they've got three guys in the middle of their offensive line that were backups a year ago. And then on the right side, or right tackle, is Alex Leatherwood, who's a rookie, who's also injured right now too. So that's where I'm kind of coming at, where it's like the Raiders are just beat up front and they're super young. You know, their left tackle, Colton Miller, he's kind of become like the stalwart. He's the one darling of the five, where he's actually been playing really well and honestly ascending into one of the top five, top 10 offensive tackles in the league right now. But yeah, I mean, the other four are just a lot of question marks. They have not looked good in both pass protection and the running ball. The Raiders averaged like 2 point there. Or I looked it up actually before this. The Raiders are currently last in the league in yards per carry as a team with 2.9.
Wow.
So, and that's 100% because of the offensive line just can't get any push and actually gets pushed backwards. So that's where I'm kind of like a little bit concerned about. And I mean, Christian Wilkins is a guy that I knew of, and I, you know, I've seen his highs. I obviously don't pay attention to the Dolphins as much, so you would know more than I do. So hopefully they catch him on a down week and whatnot. But that was interesting. It's interesting to hear you say that's kind of where I was coming at.
Yeah. I mean, you guys played two pretty stellar defensive lines in the first 2 weeks. Yards per carry. So this is almost like could be a get right matchup for both teams.
Right.
And you just don't know which way it's going to go. You're talking about your running game, though. I'd love to ask, because as a fantasy fan, this made no sense to me. Josh Jacobs was out last week and is per Gruden highly questionable. So you have Kenyon Drake, who Dolphins fans know well. This is an explosive guy, someone who can make big plays. And you have Peyton Barber, who I think, if Craig, I'm wrong, out-carried Kenyon Drake last week.
I think it's funny, like when Jacobs got ruled out, John Gruden was asked, or like, so this means it's a big week for Kenyon Drake. He goes, I think it's going to be a big week for Peyton Barber. Not even prompted
to hell,
Peyton,
man. Barber.
I mean, Peyton Barber like is a little bit more of a downhill running back, which is, I think, where he was coming at. And like, you know, when you want to seal a game, that's the type of guy you want a little bit more. Whereas Drake, as you guys know, is a little bit more athletic. You want to, you know, spread him out on the outside. And while Peyton Barber did have more carries than Kenyon Drake, Kenyon Drake was getting a lot of like passes in like the check down game and kind of like, you know, spreading guys out and whatnot and getting those, using that, the passing game as the extension of the running game, right? Where you can get them in space a little bit more. So Kenyon Drake actually had more overall touches if you can count the receptions. Okay. He just didn't have as many carries. But yeah, I mean, without Jacobs, like this is a running back crew where they paid Kenyon Drake a ton of money in the offseason, or a ton of money, I should say, for a second running back. And then, yeah, I mean, we were all kind of flabbergasted. Like everyone who was in support of the Drake signing at the time was, you know, tooting their horns like, oh, it doesn't look so bad now. And then they come out and like you said, they pretty much barely used them. So it is very strange for fantasy owners. I'm a Kenyon Drake fantasy owner, so I was actually kind of happy about it. But so I'm hoping that trend continues, but I also hope Jacobs is back too. So we'll see what happens. Sure. But I want to wrap things up by talking about Brian Flores for a second. You mentioned at the beginning of the show, he's a coach of the year candidate, but a few years ago, things weren't looking so pretty. He kind of came in, made a bunch of changes, you know, like trading Laremy Tunsil, Minkah Fitzpatrick. And it seemed like Flores was kind of going to be one of these another Belichick disciple. That's just kind of like going to come in and rule with an iron fist, make a bunch of changes his way or the highway. But it hasn't been, it's been the exact opposite. I think he's honestly one of the best young coaches in the NFL. So I'm curious about, you know, where you think Flores is as a coach, and, you know, can you be a little honest with me? Were you a little nervous at first when he came in and started trading all those guys?
I was a little nervous. I'll be honest. I was a little nervous, especially because, you know, the history of the Belichick coaching tree is not great. Another reason I was just a little bit nervous though is because I'm one of those glass half full football fans. So I was like, oh yeah, you know, Flores is coming in, new coach, but maybe we could compete this year. And then Tunsil's gone. And then Minkah Fitzpatrick's gone, and then Kenyon Drake's gone, and it's like, oh, so we're not competing. Like this is a tank year. But You know, you go through that as a fan, and obviously, you know, you're excited about you're watching tankathon.com. You're going to draft, you know, you're saying you like to watch the draft. So we were certainly, as Dolphins fans, all focused on that. And, you know, then over the course of his tenure, you were seeing the Dolphins win against teams they shouldn't win against, right? The team was always, after those first couple of weeks where it was a real mess, they were pretty plucky and competitive, even through the year they were tanking. Over the course of last year, the 10-6 year, there were some games, again, there where you saw the team was down and continued to fight, right? And that sort of Flores' thing is this competitiveness, this toughness, the coach the players want to run through a wall for, and the guy that everyone seems to have a great deal of respect for. So at this point, I'm certainly really excited. The one reservation I think I and a lot of Dolphins fans have at this point is there have been a lot of personnel misfires and miscues, right? In free agency, in the draft. And I think a lot of us are like, listen, we love that Flores seems to be able to coach the heck out of whoever's on this team. But how much involvement does he have about who's being put on the team? Is that all Chris Greer, the general manager, or is Flores really involved in that? Because some of that's got to get fixed. I know every NFL fan is upset when there are free agency, big contract right. misfires, when there are big draft misfires. And it seems a lot more magnified when it's on your team because you're overanalyzing every single one. But there have been a lot. And so I am all in on Flores, the coach. I'm really hoping and think he can be the guy for the next 5, 6, 7, 8, 10, 12 years. I'm just hoping that the right players are put on the team to help him get there at this point. Now, I don't want to overreact to 135-0 loss, right?
Gotcha.
Tampa Bay got stomped at the beginning of last year and won the Super Bowl. So this is not an overreaction to that at all. It's just some of the scouting has to be fixed. And I honestly have no idea what his involvement in that is. But at this point, given how we've seen the team perform under him, how it seems like, you know, the players talk about him, how much respect he has just from everyone in the building, even the media seems to really respect him. That's something you're just overall excited about. So, you know, at this point, I full support and Flores we trust kind of thing.
Awesome, man. I hear you. And I trust me, we know what it's like to have a coach that's might be a little too overbearing in the draft process. So.
Yeah, again, and I don't know what his involvement is like. Yeah. What's your best feeling? I know we're going to wrap up, but as a Raiders fan who has to, at this point, is kind of just tied to John Gruden because of his contract, what is a Raiders fan's perspective on him? Because he's the rest of us kind of just look and laugh a little bit because that's kind of personality he has, you know? He's a funny guy.
Yeah, for sure. I think when you start out 2-0 and, you know, Raiders have been good the last few years, I think most people are going to be pretty high on him and whatnot. And I mean, like you said, he's got a great personality. He wants to be the Raiders coach, which, you know, years past there hasn't been that and whatnot. And he's actively wanted this job and, you know, speaks to Raider fans really well and gets everyone fired up. He's a great motivator. And I do think John Gruden is a good coach. And the reason is because I think John Gruden's a terrible talent evaluator. But they're still winning games. Like you hear about all these first round picks or these first round busts, you know, they got the 2019 and 2020 draft classes, they had 5 first round picks. And like, I think PFF's Mike Renner posted like about them. Only one of them was really producing in the first 2 games of the season. And he was playing the lowest value position in the NFL at running back, which is Josh Jacobs. So I think that's kind of where, at least me personally, like the kind of the rumor is that like John Gruden has, you know, full control and final say over the early picks. And then kind of like, look, let's Mayock take like the mid round and late round guys. And who knows how much truth there is to that. But I think with that kind of where that coming from, that kind of makes me a little bit weary as of him being in full control. But like you said, it's kind of like, we got this guy for around 10-year contract, might as well ride it out with them. So it's definitely a little bit of that, but yeah, I mean, and again, I think if John Gruden, the talent evaluator, or John Gruden, the GM, could take a jack seat to John Gruden, the coach, the Raiders would be a lot better off. But, you know, I don't know if that'll happen. So we'll see what happens. But
fair enough.
But Justin, I just want to thank you again for coming on. Really appreciate you. Where can the good people find you over on Twitter?
Yeah, no, thank you so much for having me on Twitter. I'm at @HireJustin. That's at @HIER Justin. And of course, I write for SB Nation, the Finsider. So you could certainly find me and my articles on there. Matt, thank you so much for having me. It's been an absolute blast. I really appreciate it.
No problem, man. Really appreciate you coming on once again. Yeah. Give Justin a follow, posts a lot of good NFL content. We're all football fans here. Get to know the Dolphins a little bit better. But other than that, until next week, guys.